This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. You're listening to Lynn and Kelvin. It's 5:08. And for our first story of the show today, you may have seen this floating around because turns out, big news, Malaysia could soon see drug addiction decriminalised. But the question remains, what would that mean for us socially as well as in terms of our safety and our health?
The Home Ministry and Health Ministry have both agreed to implement this step, recognising that drug addicts are patients in need of treatment and rehab and not criminals who must be punished. Home Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin said the decriminalisation would include a treatment programme which would boost the roles of family members and the community.
So he added that the Home Ministry was also looking at law reform to give a second chance to addicts who have been cured and released from the rehabilitation centres of the National Anti-Drug Agency, or the AADK. So the minister said that most of the 70,000 prisoners in Malaysia right now are drug addicts, and the move has been welcomed by organisations like the Federation of Private Medical Associations Malaysia and the Addiction Medicine Associations of Malaysia.
So this isn't really something that's new. This has been in the works for a while. Even the previous administration had said that this was something that they were thinking of implementing, seeing as it's been such a long-standing problem and the hysteria-led policies that we've run for so long, the war on drugs like policy that we've had for so long, hasn't really seemed to have worked.
Yeah, correct. Although I am also curious about the fact that now that we're shifting away from this whole idea of waging war on drugs, which also specifically often means waging war on specific segments of society, right? Let's face it. How soon will the mindset shift follow through? Because that is a big thing. It's not enough to just say that, oh, you know, we're going to decriminalize. It's also going to be changing so many things. I think all the articles about this have noted the shift in language from criminals in need of prosecution to patients in need of treatment. And that is just one of the ways in which we're going to have to start shifting our sentences, shifting our phrases, just changing the way we think about it. Because whenever, for example, we talk about the death penalty, something that always comes up is this issue of drugs. And now I'm not saying that drug dealers are in the same category as drug addicts, but that doesn't change the fact that for many of us, the way we view anything to do with drugs is very much set in stone.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing, right? Whenever we talk about this, the example and the case study of Portugal is often brought up. And what changed there really? I mean, it still continues. They still continue to be a case study today. But what they've really done well is that, sure, they've done the easy and the initial step of decriminalizing drugs, but that also came hand in hand with treatment programs. That also came hand in hand with a change in behavior of how, let's say if your portfolio was previously in dealing with those who are addicted to drugs, it's a change in training them to be to treat them better. And it's also the fact that they also have had many awareness programs since then. So it's really a multi-prong angle that you have to take with this and not just taking the step, well, we're just going to remove the law and not really do much else.
Yeah, Portugal is a success story that is cited time and time again, right? And it is one that we're going to, I think, delve into in a bit more detail after this. We're going to just talk about how the lessons that we can take from there, but also what we expect to see, right? Mm-hmm. How we expect to move forward on this. We're going to be speaking after this with criminal law lawyer and former prosecutor Samantha Chong, who recently opined that perhaps if we were to do something about the way we sentenced people, perhaps our prisons wouldn't be so overcrowded. So that's just one of the things we'll be talking about. Samantha, thanks for joining us. So to start off, when looking at a country like Portugal that decriminalized drug offenders in 2001, how effective have rehabilitation treatments been in preventing relapses and repeat offenses when compared to sentencing?
Well, Portugal used to be one of the countries in Europe that has the highest overdose deaths. So after they decriminalized drug use and possession for personal possessions, I mean, a lot of people would have think that drug use would have go up. But what they can see is that there are instantly huge reductions in problematic drug use. So more people are actually referred to treatment. So this is something that is proven to be working, yeah.
What social repercussions can we expect to see from this move? Does it in any way affect safety?
Well, many people will say that Portugal is a Western country, it's a liberal country, but that's not the case because Portugal is a very conservative Catholic country. And when they first started decriminalizing the drug use and possession for criminal possession, the police are worried that they will not get any info or intel on the drug dealer. But history has proven that, no, that is not the hindrance. They can still get their intel that they want, but more people are actually getting treatments that they need. And it also reduces the workload on the criminal justice system. So instead of catching drug user and all the people with small amount, the police now, they can focus on more serious and violent crimes. So this is the takeaway we can see from Portugal.
So will this solve or help to solve our problems with overcrowding in prisons?
So when we talk about prison overcrowding, in 2017, 56% of the prison population, I think it's about 39,500, they are low-level, non-violent drug-related offences, i.e. small amount possessions and drug use. So if you take these people out from prison, of course, your prison will be half empty. Now the prison authorities, they have more resources to focus on rehabilitation. Because prison themselves acknowledge that they do not have the resources or expertise to rehabilitate people who have drug dependent problems, because this is a medical problem. And you talk about rehabilitation and treatment. What kind of treatments are we talking about? Are we talking about just locking people in food authority, compulsory drug detention center? That shouldn't be the way. Even the police has acknowledged that food authority doesn't work. That's why they keep on catching people. So INCB, the International Narcotic Drug Control Body, they are experts to make sure countries observe the International Drug Convention. They too have issued an alert in June, stating that countries do not have the obligation to criminalize drug use or possession for small amount for personal consumption, and these people should be channeled to evidence-based treatment instead. And in 2012, there is a UN joint agency statement that compulsory drug detention center needs to be replaced because of many human rights violations. So just ask ourselves, if you have a brother or sister or your family members that have drug dependence issues, do you want them locked up? No. We want them to go through evidence-based treatment. The people that know what they are doing, not just giving them detox, real tolerance, and expect them to be better. People who have drug use disorder has one common thing, is that there are other underlying medical conditions. For example, depression, or they have ADHD, or they have PTSD. They are victims of child abuse or neglect. So if you lock them up, cold turkey, it doesn't solve all this reason that led them to addiction in the first place.
Will this also change the stigma attached to drug addiction and addicts, since there's a push to view them as patients in need of treatment rather than criminals? Was this important in the drug decriminalization efforts in Portugal?
I spoke to our Portugal counterpart as to what are the hurdles when they face when they implement decriminalization. Of course, in the beginning, it's difficult. The stigmatization is still there. But once they decriminalize, they see improvement. And in Malaysia, let's not look about Portugal. Let's look at Malaysia. In 2005, 2006, Malaysia has, in a way, decriminalized drug use and personal consumption. These people, instead of being sent to prison, they were sent to clinic cure and care. And the compulsory detention center was converted to voluntary treatment center. Instead of 30 guards to guard the center, they bring out the fines because now it is a voluntary treatment. People no longer want to run away. And there are solid local research that show that people who went for voluntary treatment center have 50% higher retention rate on treatment compared to those into compulsory drug detention center. But those who actually went for voluntary treatment only relapse after about 300 days, and those who go on for the compulsory drug detention center, after they were released, within a month they will relapse. and we are spending tons and tons of money on compulsory drug use detention centers. As to talk about the press statement yesterday, we want to decriminalize drug use, sorry, addiction. But we must also look at possession for personal consumption, because like smokers, smokers always have a few cigarettes on them. People who use drugs, most of the time they have a certain amount of drugs on them. So if you just decriminalize drug use or addiction, but not possession for small amount, instead of being arrested for drug use, now they'll be arrested for small amount of drug possession, which will defeat the whole purpose.
So when it comes to Portugal, what can we adopt from the way it has been carried out successfully that might provide a good jumping off point for how this would work here?
To tell you the truth, we do not have to look at other countries, because in Malaysia, we already have a successful model. In Besut, the police, after they arrest people who use drugs and they put them into lockup, the local NGO will go to the lockup and ask these people, do you want treatment support or do you want to go to jail? So if they go for treatment and support, their file is put on hold, so they are not charged. And they see a higher retention rate for treatment and support and a lower risk for re-offending. So Malaysia has done it before. We just need to upscale what has been done, and we need to change our punitive drug laws. The war on drugs has to end, because war on drugs is a war on family institutions. If you go back to, there's a boy who was arrested because he has 1 kilo of crystal. He was sentenced to 1 year. He was just 17 years old and he has 7A in the SPM. His father and his sister was arrested for low-level drug offenses as well. So what can we see in this case? The boy actually resorted to drug use because he was lonely. His family was torn apart. So that's my point. We just have to change the law. We have to have more public education to reduce the stigma.
So Home Minister Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin has said that treatment programs would boost the involvement of community and family members. What role would they play in the rehab process?
Okay. Previously, it was suggestions by some government agency that all these people who have addiction problems will be banished to other states because they will have bad influence in their own communities. But, I mean, research has found that these people who have addiction problems, they need family support. Sometimes families don't understand what is addiction. They do not understand that the drug has changed the functions of brain. I mean, these people can no longer think properly. So they get fed up, they get frustrated. But when family members will explain that this is the effect of the drug in the brain, then they are more understanding, they are more willing to take care of their loved ones. I myself have encountered one case whereby a mother of five actually will visit her husband every week in Sungai Buloh prison. She has to endure 4 hours and bring all her children, her mother, to see her husband. These people, they are willing to support their loved one to go through, to break the circle of addiction. The problem is the government, is the society ready to help these people? So, just one more thing. I mean, a lot of people compare that Malaysia has relaxed smoking, has big smoking, even more serious than drug use. But I would just like to explain that smoking is never a criminal issue. You won't get criminal conviction for that. But drug use is. Now, even if you want to go and get treatment from a doctor to deal with addiction, the doctor has the obligation under the law to report you. Once they report you, you'll be registered as a criminal, and this will actually deter future employment. And who in their right mind will ask for treatment if it is that case? So I would say that we are not making drug use more easy or flexible, but we are making drug-dependent treatment more accessible.
Samantha, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us. That was Samantha Chong, criminal lawyer and former prosecutor. And we're talking today about decriminalizing drug addiction. And as Samantha rightly points out, right, just increasing that access to programs, increasing that access for rehabilitative programs and changing the approach, really, about how we think about addiction. So we've been asking you for your thoughts on the matter. You know, how do you feel about this, about the fact that the government is moving in this direction when it comes to drug addiction? You can call us 7777. 0123-29900, WhatsApp 0187898899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. On WhatsApp, Maniam Sanka says, what steps are being taken to ensure that drug addicts are supervised, as they might have criminal tendencies to support their addiction? Families often cannot control addicts by themselves.
So the point is that while we wait for the government to be more, to release more details, it would usually come in a form where they would have mobile clinics or mobile centers. They're working with experts coming out, and to have to make that as accessible as possible, in the sense where they can also provide drug replacement therapy, and where they don't have to quit cold turkey, that might cause the situation to escalate.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I also think that when it comes to, I don't know if there can be a supervisor per se, you know, I'm not certain that that's how it's going to work, especially because you want people to eventually be able to live more independently. You want people to eventually be able to return to society in full, right? And not always be watched over. But the way it has tended to work elsewhere in the past is to have a counsellor.
Yeah,
you would have a counsellor with whom you have to have X amount of meetings, you know, with this amount of frequency. And that is supposed to contribute, I think, towards keeping you on the straight and narrow.
As well as regular checkups. And the point here is also the fact that if you, say, accidentally slip back, you go through a remission stage or something, you don't get punished for that because they see that as a health problem, because with health, you do tend to slip also.
Exactly. And if you do see it as a health problem, then you will be able to, I think, be to look at it a little bit more kindly, to look at it with a little bit more understanding when it comes to the entire situation. So yeah, we're talking about decriminalizing drug addiction. You can call us 7733-2900, WhatsApp 0187898899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Is this something that you would welcome? Let us know. You're listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.